Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy. I host the show, and today I have a great guest on. I'm actually very honored that he's on my show. He is an author. He's an urban mystic and a modern visionary. And he also lectures, and his name is Stuart Wild. So, Stuart, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's very kind of you.
Actually, like I said, it's my pleasure. Now, Stuart, let's find out a little bit about you. I'm sure many people know about you, but just in case, you know, there's some out there who are listening that do not, let's talk a little bit about who Stuart really is. So what prompted you to start your journey that you've been on for a while, Stuart?
I don't know. My mother's uncle was a spirit medium in Sicily, of all places. And she gave me a book when I was about 17 called The Powers That Be, and it was all about the sort of celestial hierarchies and the White Brotherhood, and it was very much like sort of the teachings of the Theosophists and so on. I became interested in all that stuff, and at the age of 28, I took a silver mind control course, and I began sort of studying meditation and trance, and then bit by bit, these inner worlds were, you know, opened up to me, and I began to see visions. In the year 2000, they really hotted up, and since 2000, in the last 9 years, I've documented 200,000 visions. But I've probably
had
sort of half a million. And they deal a lot with, like, the dimensions, the nature of the inner fractal worlds, the digital fractal reality, the hell worlds, the celestial worlds, everything, all the way down to the hovering Madonnas that will appear in different places, you know, the visions of the Madonna, like Fatima and Lourdes, and the return Jesus, and the restoration of the planet, and the triumph of Gaia, and the end of days. It's all in there. It's all in there, and I write about it, and I teach people about it, and I have a blog that people can follow daily, and they can read about these visions or study various aspects of spiritual practices and stuff that I recommend and so forth.
That's kind of neat, Stuart. Stuart, when you first started getting your visions and everything, did you have a hard time with those, or did they just come so natural and they just felt like they should just be what they are?
They came naturally, but they were awkward for me because I didn't understand them. And also, I seemed to sort of like find myself being pulled into another world that I didn't know much about. And one is naturally sort of a little bit white-knuckled about hanging onto the world you know, albeit it's not so interesting, you know. But I had a very strange experience because one of the very first things that happened to me was I went through a wall, a solid wall, in a hotel in New Orleans. And I lost about 45 minutes, and then I came back through the wall and found myself back on the bed again. And so that was very, very strange. And I wrote about that in a book called God's Gladiators. But it was this idea that, like, our reality isn't solid. So it exists in a solid form, but it also exists in a hazy wave form. And so the human body isn't solid, and the reality isn't solid. The wall isn't solid. And I've seen that many, many times. And, in fact, in my seminars, which I present twice a year in Amsterdam and Las Vegas, I show people, you know, how to dematerialize the human body. I think I'm the only New Age, New Thought teacher that actually dematerializes his paying customers.
When you're going through your experiences, did you start talking to people about them right away, or did you keep them to yourself, Stuart? How did you handle that?
No, I did talk to people because at the time I was sort of surrounded by students because I've been writing for 30 years. And so I'd talk to them about what I'd seen, and then bit by bit by bit, I trained them to see. Because that's actually what my great mission in life is to teach people how to see these inner worlds and to see these visions. And many of them, you know, began to see visions that I would never be able to see. And in fact, I have a couple of students that are way ahead of me now. I mean, way ahead of me, you know. They're way, way, way more visionary than I am. So I've trained a lot of people to see. And, of course, as more and more people could see these inner worlds, these what we call a lunar mirror worlds, we began to write the topography, the sort of geography of those worlds, and we began to write navigation as to how to move around those worlds, and we began to compare experiences. And what happened in a general sense was that out of hundreds of thousands and now millions of visions, we've come to comprehend those worlds because we all essentially see the same worlds.
When people first start to see their visions, or they first start to feel that energy come through them, what are some of the things that they've said to you, Stuart?
Fear. Fear is usually the first thing, you know? It's the non...
Fear?
It's the non, yeah, it's a disconnect. You don't understand what you're looking at. And also, you begin to see the enormity. You know, we live in quite small lives where they're, you know, they're very regulated. There's a sort of dogma. There's a control. There's a rhythm. Monday to Friday, Saturday we go bowling. You know, that sort of stuff. And suddenly there's these worlds, and they're so vast, and the vast nature of the world scares people. But I tell people, hey, breathe, stay calm, and become an observer, you know? Then the second thing that happens is the celestial worlds carry them to places that they've never seen before. So they go to extremes of bliss. And one thing that we discovered very early on is that bliss is really plain painful. There's a moment in bliss, sort of 5 and 10 minutes into it, where you just cannot take it anymore. You just cannot take any more bliss. And so that takes a while to get used to. And then the other thing that happens, generally speaking, is that people start to get very warm. The celestial heat starts to come upon them. And so they can't sleep at night because they're radiating heat, or the heat is radiating out of their eyes. And again, we have methodologies for dealing with that. So that those are the processes. And then gradually it becomes a journey through your shadow, through your understanding, through your relationships, through your comprehension, to where you kind of go wider and wider and wider and become ever more infinite and become ever more part of more and more worlds.
Do you think, sir, it would be really helpful for these children of today to start working with them at a very young age rather than wait until they've kind of been brainwashed several times over and then as adults try to redo it?
Well, you know, I saw your foundation where you help children come to these perceptions, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I mean, going into the sort of regular, what I call the TikTok system for children is very detrimental. But then that's their karma, that's their evolution, and we all have to go through it. But yeah, if you could teach children to be wider and bigger and more visionary and more creative, more problem-solving, rather than looking to, let's say, the grown-ups to fix it for them, or the teachers to fix it for them, or the government to fix it for them when they get older. You know, if we could take them into this visionary state, then they would naturally be children of the God Force, children of the Aluna, you know, even at a very young age, you know? I mean, I do a lot of ayahuasca ceremonies. Are you familiar with ayahuasca, Nancy?
No, I've not heard of it. What is it?
Oh, it's a Brazilian vine, and it's been in the Amazon 100,000 years, and people drink it. It's a form of medicine, so it's kind of really the only medicine they have there, and it cures lots of various diseases and so on in the body. But it also takes you into these Aluna mirror worlds, and so you drink this vine, and you lay down, and you watch these worlds. And the journey can last from 3 hours to 12 hours. And you go through endless amounts of your own shadow and processing your karma and watching the destiny of the world and learning about these digital fractal worlds that are part of our inner reality. And they give children ayahuasca, like literally babies at the age of like 1 day old. They give them half a teaspoon of this ayahuasca. It builds up DMT in the pineal gland. And of course, DMT is the spirit molecule. It's the visionary molecule. So people in the West are often depleted of DMT because of stress, because of diet, because of various reasons. But once they build that DMT back up in the pineal, then suddenly they can see again. And of course, their ability for like psychic powers and intuition and all of those gifts increase enormously.
If somebody wanted to get some of that, would you know where to get it?
Yes. The problem is you can't just ship it to somebody because it's a sort of spiritual process, and you really need an expert with you when you take it. You know, you can't just sort of slug it back on a Saturday night and, you know, watch late night TV. You know, so it is always in a shamanistic setting with somebody that is an expert. I mean, we do these ayahuasca tours to Ecuador, which are on my site, stillwild.com. And, of course, there's ayahuasca all over the world nowadays, but people just have to Google it. But you do have to have it in control of circumstances. I do not, absolutely do not recommend that people take it on their own or mix up a brew and try it on their own. It's best if they go with somebody, because if they go with somebody, you know, they can guide them into these journeys and show them and assist them and give them a reassurance, because it is extreme, because you're looking at your shadow, you're looking at yourself, you're seeing yourself in a higher context that you've never seen before. And so you need guidance and care and somebody to have a compassion and a love for you and take you through it like a guide, like a sort of friendly tourist guide. You know?
That would be interesting. Now, you have a lot of upcoming events, and the next one is like now, basically June 5th through the 12th, and it's really sold out, correct?
I think it's July, actually. It's in Amsterdam.
I do have
a gig, and I've got a very small sort of boutique-type evening on the 24th in British Columbia in Canada at White Rock, which is near the American border. And that'll be posted on my site today, I think. And then in July, I'll be in Amsterdam for a weekend there where I teach people to see. We hold gigs in Amsterdam and in Las Vegas because they're big hubs, you know. So Amsterdam for the Europeans is a very, very cheap place to fly to. And, of course, for the Americans, Las Vegas is easy. You know, all the sort of tour companies and flights go to Las Vegas, and so we pick places where it's simple for people to get there, you know. But, yeah, the next one is Amsterdam in July. Oh, there's
and then you have August.
August, yeah.
Okay.
We have, an ayahuasca tour in Ecuador in August and another one in November. So, yeah, there's plenty of stuff that people could consider if they want, you know.
Okay, well, the September one in Vegas, you're only about 8.5 hours
away from me. Yeah, September is in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand. And that's in the first week.
I might want to join you at that.
Well, we'd be more than happy to offer you a complimentary press pass, so you don't have to go. We do anyway, Nancy. Don't worry. We'd be happy to, you know.
Okay.
So as long
all
as
right.
you can get, well, you can get in the banger and travel down to Las Vegas, you know, and then the gig will be free. We wouldn't charge you to come.
Oh, that would be great. And I think, you know, I was like looking through all of the different ones that you're doing, and I thought, well, man, I got to go meet this guy face to face here. And then I saw Vegas, and I thought,
I'll be our department, Mr. James Stacy, and he'll provide you the ticket, no problem. We'd be delighted to have you there.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Now, the very first book that you wrote, Stuart.
Yes.
What prompted you to write that book, and how did you feel about it once it was done?
Well, actually, I felt really embarrassed when I first published that book, right, because I didn't dare take it to a publisher. It was called Miracles, and I didn't even put my name on it. So there are about 1,000 copies of Miracles somewhere in this world that don't have my name on them, that are kind of collector's editions. But later on, I got the courage to put my name on it. And essentially, it was this idea of how to sort of create your energy, visualize, and pull to you the miracles that you want in your life. And I think Miracles has probably sold 1 million copies since it was first published. So that was sort of quite a little bit of a success story. And that impelled me to write my second book, which is called The Force. And then after I'd written 2 books, I was comfortable with it, and I just carried on writing, you know. But essentially, it was this desire to be free, you know, and the desire to fight my way out of the matrix, to fight my way out of these control systems, and to carry as many people as wanted to come with me, you know. And that's been my whole mission. I mean, I've invested millions in finding people and trying to train them to, you know, to become free of the pain of their life and their restriction.
See, that'd be great. You know, so many people, because I do a lot of, you know, intuitive counseling sessions. I've been doing it for like 32 years. And one of the biggest things that people really do have a hard time with is allowing themselves to be who they really are. Not if they want to be, but who they really are, because they are so controlled. And it's like, you know, you've got to wake up people because, you know, there's going to be a lot of changes coming, and you've got to know who you are, not what you want people to think you are or what you've been told you are, but who you are. So, I mean, I'm real interested in all the stuff that you have to say because people need to wake up.
Yeah, then you probably can see the sort of psychological variance in people where, like, they pretend to be one thing, but in fact they're something completely different. And then sometimes it's quite innocuous. You know, they're working as an insurance agent and they hate the job. And what they really want to do is teach people deep sea fishing or whatever it is. You know, that's the love of their life, you know. But they just don't have the courage to jump. And sometimes that's because they have obligations and family and mortgages and car payments and all that stuff, and they're scared. And then sometimes they use it as an excuse not to jump, you know. And so I tell them, hey, be brave, jump.
I do too. You know, I have them do some exercises to try to, you know, be okay with who they are and like who they are and accept who they are. And it's just, you know, and they'll come back a few months later and they go, boy, Nancy, I wish somebody would tell me that sooner. Like, yeah, but you had it in you. You just didn't know it. Because, you know, I believe everybody, Stuart, have all of that ability within them. But because they don't know who to talk to and they don't know what techniques to use, they may never find that out. So, I mean, I'm really grateful that you're out there, you know, with what you want to do, and that's wake up people and take them with you. I mean, that's great.
Exactly. You know, the whole thing is that, you see, people get confused because they think they're supposed to be perfect. So they spend all their lifetime pretending to be perfect. And I say in my books that, like, Mr. Nice Guy who fries the hamburgers and, you know, has the beer and he's this jolly guy making everybody laugh is often a devil. I mean, a complete devil. He hides his disdain, his rancor, his arrogance, his womanizing, his crooked business practices are all hidden behind Mr. Nice Guy. And, you know, little goody-goody two-shoes, the perfect this and the perfect that, is probably just a slut. So give up on trying to be perfect. Give up on trying to be Mr. Nice Guy. Give up on trying to be everything for everyone. Give up on pretending. And just come back inside yourself, because we're seeking to become whole. And to become whole, you have to embrace your shadow, and you have to be a little bit dark and a little bit light, and you have to admit to your crimes, and you have to reconcile yourself. Any human that isn't reconciled with both parts of themselves isn't a human. They don't have a soul. They've just got a pretend soul. And so I tell people, hey, go on this journey. Yes, it's scary sometimes. Yes, it's challenging. Yes, it can make you cry. Yes, you'll feel ashamed. Yes, you'll feel relieved. But in the end, you come through it, and then you become a complete being. And we really, really need to process karma now. You know, this is the end. You know, we're getting close. The world as we know it is just about to disappear. And we need to become whole, and we need to become safe. And the only way to become safe is to embrace your shadow and accept your divinity. And a lot of people are so down on themselves, they cannot accept that eternity inside of themselves. You know, it's like the Christ consciousness, the Buddhahood, the Bodhisattva, Kuan Yin, whatever you want to call them, Allah, that's a light inside each person. And if they can embrace that light, you do not have to be perfect to embrace your divinity, I tell people, you know?
And you're right. It's good that you're liberating, because people, you know, they make themselves sick trying to be the things that they're not and ashamed of maybe the things that they are. You know, and that's unfortunate because people really do need to wake up and like themselves, love themselves. It's real important. The last book that your latest book, Stuart, is called Grace Gila and the End of the Day. Can you maybe explain the title a little bit? Because it's interesting to me because I'm interested.
Okay, let's start with grace. When we watch the lunar mirror worlds, okay, which you watch in trance, we see grace as a golden light, but we also see it sometimes as a very deep blue light, sometimes it's a purple light, and sometimes it's a golden light of mustard, a mustard gold. And we can see that that light is data-driven. It's full of information. There are trillions of, you know, gigabytes of information inside every minute atomic part of this grace. And so we lie inside this light, and we download the information. It comes to us in visions, intuitions, feelings, formulas, whatever, you know. But we learn by watching the light. And it comes to us, and it's attempting to free us so that we can free others. So the grace is not just sort of the amazing grace that saved a wretch like me, which is, let's say, God's benevolence that digs you out of trouble at the last minute, but it's a data-driven information system. So
thank you.
So just to back up there, Nancy, are we back on air?
Yes.
We are.
Yes,
okay,
we are.
Just to back up there, so we see grace as data-driven, and we lie in trance, and we watch it, and it's moving so fast, we can't decipher every second, every molecule, it's impossible. But it's like a download on your computer. You can't watch it downloading, it's going too quick. But at the end of 3 minutes, you can click it, and there's a video, there's a music track, there's a file for you to read. And so we align to the grace in order to learn more. And then Gaia, of course, is Lovelock's theory that the planet has an intelligent system that controls the diversity, the biological diversity of the planet. But we see Gaia as a goddess. We see her as having the planet as her physical body, the same way as we believe that we're eternal spirits inside of the human body. So we see her having an intelligence, and we can see her tears, we can see her pain, we can see the terror that humans create in her force fields, and so because of our cruelty towards her. And then the end of days is saying that, like, this is the end time. I don't believe in the end of the world. I don't think the world is going to disappear. I just believe that the world that we know is going to disappear. So the world of military violence, state-sponsored violence, arrogance, the tax system, the insidious nastiness, the control, the dogma, the consumerism, the self-indulgence, that world will end and we'll come down to a slimmer, leaner, more tribal world where we're all going to have to work together to survive.
But that's good. That's really good. There was a beep, so that means we have a caller. So, caller, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
And can we have your name, please?
My name is Rena.
Okay,
I
Rena.
I spoke to Stuart about a week ago.
Okay.
Rena, is it you again? Is it you again? You're always there. And what can I do for you now, love?
Well, I have lots of experiences, but I had one that was really strange. I was out and way back in where there was a rock cut. A railroad track went through it, and there were a lot of quartz veins in the rock cut. And I was walking along, talking to my sister, and all of a sudden, things really changed. There was this big noise, like a mechanical breathing or a heart beating or something like that, and the rocks, like they moved toward me and then back, and with the breathing.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, you know, I was just saying to Nancy 10 or 15 minutes ago, you know, we live in a non-solid world, and I have taught people to dematerialize, and I've shown it to 1,000 people, or possibly 2,000 people. You know, the idea that the rock is solid is only an illusion. That rock can lift up and walk towards you, you know? So it's just you're being shown inside that experience, essentially, the non-local, non-solid nature of reality. And how your breathing is connected to the rocks, your breathing is connected to the love of the trees, your breathing is connected to the love of the animals. If you have disdain, it makes the animals sick. If you have anger, it makes the flowers wilt. You know, you're connected. We're all connected. How we breathe, how we feel, how we resonate, the eminence of our heart, the Eucharist that is inside our heart, that light, it goes out and makes everything whole or it makes everything sick. Depending.
So, what to do with it?
What to do with it?
Yeah.
It's just observe it. Just observe it. Just observe it and say, thank you very much for this lesson. Please present me the next lesson.
All right.
It's a study course, you know. You're in a study course. Ask for the next lesson.
All right.
Okay, Rena.
Great, Rena. Thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate that. Have a good day.
You're very welcome. You take care. Stuart, out of all of the books that you have written, which one do you like the best?
They're different. It's apples and oranges. I was, in the early 80s, early 90s, I wrote out The Technology of the Etheric Web, the etheric life force around the body, which previously was sort of described in somewhat wishy-washy terms about the aura and the colors of the aura and so forth. And I wrote out the manual for the etheric web in a book called The Quickening. And I put a lot of etheric exercises which are verifiable and doable. So that for me was a threshold book because it was the first time that I kind of presented essentially a technological answer. And then I wrote books about the morph, and then I wrote books about these inner worlds. And each of the books has sort of followed on from the previous one. And I lay it out in chapter and verse. I show people the technology. I show them how to use it. I tell them how, what, where, when. And it's helped me to write the books, and it's helped them to read them, I suppose. So The Quickening was a threshold book for me. And then there's a book I wrote called God's Gladiators, which my publisher refused to publish. So we published it anyway. And then the last two books are important. The Art of Redemption is kind of an escape manual. You know, if you're really fed up, and you want to escape the matrix of control, the Art of Redemption is the book you want to read, you know?
Mm-hmm. You have one called The Little Money Bible.
In the 80s, I wrote books about money, and I wrote a sort of book that became a kind of classic called The Trick to Money's Having Some, and it's been in print for 20 years, and it essentially talks about how to aggressively align your feeling to money-making. And the central philosophy of The Trick to Money Loving Some is, I tell people, hey, raise your energy, people will be drawn to you. When they show up, bill them. Figure a way of billing them. You have to have a knowledge, you have to have a product, you have to have a service, you have to have something easy to sell them. And so I use that. A lot of people have won the lotto, using the trick to money. It's really extraordinary. We get letters in, one woman, 1.7 million. So I'm not saying buy the book and you're bound to win the lottery. I'm not going to say that. But it does prove the book aligns you to where the money is. And so that was a sort of threshold book in the abundance department. And a little money Bible was like a compilation of all those ideas, almost like a little reference book. I think it was a hardback book when I first published it. So those are the two books that I did mostly. Because, I mean, you need money to set yourself free, don't you?
Why do you think people, Stuart, have such a hard time having money? Because most people are really suffering today, and they have been actually for a while. They don't, know that, but they have.
Yeah, no, so I feel for them, but the principles of money are easy, you know. You have to have a knowledge, you have to have a service, or you have to have a product to sell the world. Whether you're an intuitive counselor or a plumber or you sell widgets, you know, you have to have something, you know. So people think in terms of money arriving miraculously. Well, some money does arrive miraculously, you know. But generally speaking, you have to create a money machine that others will be attracted to. So they will come and give you money for whatever it is that you offer them. And then what you offer them has to be beautiful. It has to be upmarket. It has to be better than everybody else's. It can't be a ripoff. It has to follow through with what you say it's going to do. It's got to do it. And then you build yourself a steady income. And so that's what I think people don't understand. They don't understand that they have to create a knowledge, a service, or a product. Once they have one of those things and they're happy with them, then they've got to figure out how to make that knowledge, that service, or that product original and different so it stands out against all the other people that are offering similar services or products.
Okay. You also have another book called Silent Power. That one I find very interesting. Maybe explain that a little bit to the listeners as to how that book came about.
Well, you know, I was trained by a Taoist teacher, and the whole philosophy of Taoism is this balance and how to stay silent inside the sort of, the Bodhisattva Kuan Yin, this sort of serenity, this alignment to nature. You know, the Taoists talk about walking along the banks of the Tao. And so Silent Power was about that. It was about how to create a resonance inside of you that's massively powerful, that will not be pulled out of position because of this or because of that. So how to become an observer of the world. So you don't yabba-dabba do your successes, and you don't get down on the dumps about your failures, and you don't allow the world to threaten you, and you don't allow this and you don't allow that. You more become an observer of life. So Silent Power was this sort of book that sort of showed people how to do that, how to get into this massive, powerful sense of self that doesn't need to infringe upon the world. Because, you know, in those days, I wrote about how to, like, walk through the world and not disturb anything and not change anything. To just walk through silently, you know, like David Carradine when he walked along the sand dunes in his kung fu movies, you know, at one and at peace with yourself. Allow the world to be. Don't judge them. Don't try to make them perfect. Don't try to fix them. Don't try to interfere. Don't get angry if they're doing things you don't like. Don't get angry if they think things you don't think. Don't get angry if they believe stuff you don't believe. Allow them to be. Live and let live. Live and let live and stay inside your power. Live and let live and stay inside your power. Let go. Let go. And you liberate yourself. Some people like that book because it gave them this sort of instant liberation.
I think that's important, though. People, I really think, need to be liberated. But I think they need to know it's okay to be liberated because I don't think they realize it is okay.
I think so. I mean, when you think about the media, all the programming of the media tells you you're powerless, you need the government, you need the emergency rescue board, you know, you need this, you need that, and be a drone, and, you know, give away your power and go to work and sustain the system. But, you know, there's a lot of people that wake up and say, hell no, I'm not doing that, you know. I'm just not doing it. Once you know that you refuse to do it, then that's the first step toward you walking out the door, you know. It's like take this job and shove it, you know. It's a spiritual philosophy, that is. And you got to know. You got to give yourself permission to be free, you know, which means you got to go past your insecurity. And, of course, the whole of the system is designed to impose dogma upon you, rules, regulations, the church, your family, this, that, and the other. And you have to understand that, you know, they're all entitled to your opinion, but you're entitled to your freedom, you know? I say to people that love is relative. The further you get away from your relatives, the better you feel. And that's usually the case, you know. It's like sometimes you just need to move away, you know, airport, you know. Hey, why not try Guatemala for 3 years, you know, or whatever.
I have a really unique situation. I have four generations of women all living in the same house.
Oh, my God. What's that like? Can you tell me what kind of nightmare that is? No, I mean, do they all love each other and support, or is it hell on high water?
Yeah, actually, we're all pretty good. I mean, we have our moments because we're human, but we're pretty good. My mom is 86 and my granddaughter is 9 and all the ages in between. So, you know, it's different. You know, most people can't talk about it or say it, but, you know, it's a growth process and it's a learning process of, you know, knowing how everybody really is at the particular age. But it's kind of fun, you know.
Of course, you've all got to give each other plenty of space. Otherwise, you'd all get on each other's nerves.
Actually, we do. I mean, I do my thing. My daughter's studying to be a psychologist, and my granddaughter, she's, you know, the reason why I put my child's miracle mind together because of her energy. So, you know, we get along really well. And my mom, you know, she's a pretty young 86-year-old, believe me. You know, she doesn't want to hang out with those old people, you know. So
yeah.
And, now, you also, during February and March, you did what was called Spiritual Practices 1, 2, and 3. Are you going to do that again?
I missed that question. I'm sorry, Nancy.
In February and March, you have on your website that you did Spiritual Practices 1, 2.
No, what it was a series of lessons that I was putting on the internet, and I put them up periodically. In fact, I've just written one. I'm just on the verge of writing one now. They're not particularly like a seminar or an event that you go to. They're just stuff that you can read. And I must say, I've dropped out on it for about a month because I've been so busy on other things. But my intention is to write up 50 or 100 practices that help people, you know. For example, if you take some lavender, you know, lavender oil, you know, and you put it on a wet towel, and after you take a shower, you rub your entire body with lavender, your whole celestial light radiates for hours afterwards. It's just a way of cleaning you from the etheric dross and the projection of the ghouls and the negative energies that come towards you. So that's just one simple little technique that you can use when you come out of the bath or out of the shower to create this celestial feeling around you. So it's those kinds of little sort of, you know, self-help tips, I suppose you would call them, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty neat. People need to practice those things. Now, what is the SWA list?
Well, I have a list of people that, like, I email personally. So I have all the stuff that's on my regular sites, but I also have an A-list that you know, people sign up for the A-list. They can come off at any time. It costs nothing. And I send them MP3s. I send them prayers. I send them protection songs. I send them articles. I send them notifications, whatever happens. And probably once in about 2 or 3 weeks, I send something out to this A-list. So it's like a sort of an inner group, but it's not a club, and there's nothing to join, and there's nothing to pay. But people that come on the A-list, then they get sort of special treatment because they're on the A-list.
That's kind of neat. Now that beep begins, so that means we have another caller. So, caller, are you there?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
can I hear
I'm
you
here. I can't hear you very well. I have a question for Stuart. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in the mirror world, in the Aluna, can you see clearly the beings who appear to be warm but are not on the earth plane? You can see clearly who they are in the Aluna. So there's no
illusion
there.
You can, because in the Aluna you get an instant printout of the feelings. So they may come forward all sort of smarty-smarty, radiant, da-da-la-la, but you can tell if they're devilish deep within. So all the con games and the tricks of the ghouls, we've become familiar with them. And then some of the ghoulish entities in there are so dark and dangerous, you don't have, you know, you don't need to sort of stop and ponder it. You can just see it automatically. But, of course, humans are very good at hiding. There's so many humans are hiding behind these social niceties, but, in fact, they're extremely devilish within and extremely dangerous.
So you don't find that there's any hiding in the Aluna?
No, not really, because in the Aluna, the feelings are sort of right there. You know, you can see, you can feel what it looks like. There may be a moment of doubt for a moment when you look and, let's say, beings coming at you from a distance and you're not exactly sure.
especially when someone get, you know, perhaps.
Yeah, if it's somebody you know, then you're going to tell if they're extremely dark and dangerous. Or when, don't forget, people don't go around and say, hello, I'm a serial killer, please sit here, let me talk to you for my next victim, you know? They don't. I mean, they're all Mr. Reasonable, aren't they? You know, and they get up in court and say, oh, he was such a nice guy, and he hauled the trash, and he, you know, he was at church on Sundays, and, you know, it's like the darkest people are the best at hiding how dark they are. And that's one of the factors of how the dark hides, you know, so one has to be
they're
very
so
careful.
Deceptive.
I'm sorry, my love?
They're so deceptive.
Very deceptive, extremely deceptive. Extremely deceptive, you know, extremely so. And so many beings, let's say, for example, like the Greys, that pretend they're doing experiments to save humanity, and it's a crock. You know, they come from the devil world, and they're up into moment, you know, and we've had a lot of encounters with them in there.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
You're more than welcome.
You're very welcome. Have a great day. Thanks for calling. Bye now. Stuart, you have a couple websites out there, so if the people wanted to find out more about you and how to join your A-list and get on the blog, which site would they go to do that?
They go to Stuart Wilde, StuartWilde.com and StuartWildeBlog.com. And on there is all the YouTube channels and the Flickr and the MySpace and the this and the that. It's all stacked and loaded. And so a lot of people come every day to the blog because the blog is designed as a sort of free ongoing seminar. It teaches you about the nature of reality or psychological processes or, you know, for example, spiritual practices that we talked about a few minutes ago. And the people that want to get on the A-list, they just click the A-list. We only ask for their email. We don't ask for any other details. We don't even ask their name, just their email. And then once you're on the list, then you'll receive something every few weeks. And it's sent to you directly. It's a private service rather than you having to go to a website to read it or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And they can come along and we'll look after them, you know? And we don't advertise. We don't hustle people. We certainly send out notifications. We might say, hey, well, look, there's a gig in British Columbia on June the 24th, you know? So we would let the A-list know in advance, and we'd be published elsewhere so that they can reserve a place if they wish. But we don't have that sort of hard sell, buy this, buy that, you know? Sure, people want to buy the books, all well and good, and if they don't, it's fine. We don't discriminate against people because they're not buying something.
That's kind of good. Stuart, in your opinion, how important do you think it is to get some of the feminine energy goddesses back into our lives?
Well, that's completely vital, because the inner spiritual worlds, the celestial ones, are all feminine, and the eternal Tao is feminine, and the goddess is feminine, and I mean, I genuinely believe that God's a woman, because that whole celestial light is completely feminine. So this idea of this sort of macho God, it's sort of daft, it doesn't exist. So yes, the feminine spirit is vital, and to embrace softness, to embrace tenderness, to embrace generosity, to embrace feminine ways is vital. And a man can be really, really soft and be immensely strong as well, you know, immensely powerful, immensely capable. But yeah, the softness is absolutely vital, because it's the softness and the tenderness and the femininity that will redeem you. And it's the hard-nosed macho cruelty that will condemn you. So yes, I mean, the whole of my works, I mean, almost all of my books talk about Gaia, about femininity, about the eternal Tao, about that softness, which we have to embrace. And of course, I recommend meditation as a way of controlling the mind and opening yourself up to grace and opening yourself up to the feminine spirit and allowing these processes to transform who you are. So yes, femininity, definitely, there's no question of it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it really needs to be brought back a little bit better than it has been. You have written many articles. Some of your articles talk about UFOs.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about those, because I am a very firm believer that there will be more sightings of UFOs in the very near future.
That there'll
and
be
a
more...
lot of people go more of them.
That you say there'll be more of them in the near future? It's very possible. You know,
yes.
We see the UFOs in the Aluna as inner beings, and they're birthed out of a tube that comes up at 45 degrees from below us, and they come out of this birth canal, usually 11 at a time. Born, you know, and we sit at the entrance of the tube and we kill them as they come out. But, of course, millions get away. So they're essentially inner entities, you know. They're solid, not solid. And the grays are part of the UFO. So the UFO itself is an actual entity. It's an evolving being. And the grays are inside the UFOs, and the reptiles are behind the grays. So we see them as a demonic force, essentially. And I don't know if there'll be more or less, but the whole of the human shadow is gradually coming out, and it has to come out in order for people to see it and to ameliorate it and change it. So it could also be that the amount of UFOs that come out could be double, tripled. I don't know how many might suddenly show up, you know?
Mm-hmm. I just have this feeling that they're going to be filling up more and more for whatever reason.
Yes.
There's a lot of articles, not that you have written, but other people have written, about the reptilians.
Yes.
And can you tell me a little bit about what you feel about them?
Well, deep in the lunar world, the celestial heavens and the celestial hells, and then there's middle places, and then there's sort of spirit worlds, the worlds of the dead, the worlds of discarnate entities and so on. And as you go down the hell world, they get dark and dark and dark, and the reptiles are very close to the bottom. They are definitely there. There's no question of it. And the reptiles are definitely, like, they do possess humans. They demonically possess humans. And so these stories of, let's say, humans shape-shifting into a reptile in front of somebody, that is definitely correct. I've seen it happen. Other people have seen it happen. And I'm a firm believer in that whole theory, you know. So, yes, they're there. And there is this reptilian inner world. And that reptilian inner world is inside a lot of humans, yes. Correct.
Mm-hmm. There's also a talk, well, a lot of people are going to be talking about the New World Order. What
yes.
do you think about that?
Well, it's a sort of covert fascist system for controlling everything. I think it's based on the fact that they know that the world is going to collapse. So they've got to account for how they're going to incarcerate people, how they're going to provide for people. I mean, essentially, it's a sort of fascist takeover of the world. And it's insidious, it's ongoing, it's linked to the media, it's linked to money, it's linked to all these different systems. And the people that talk about it a lot, like, let's say, Alex Jones or David Icke and so forth, I mean, they're very right in what they say. But I tell people, listen, leave the New World Order, you know, just walk away, you know. Just walk away,
mm-hmm.
just disappear, you know, get off the list, get off this, get off that, you know, leave, you know, and
mm-hmm.
And get out of it because, yeah, they're going to create mayhem for us, unfortunately, but it's our evolution to go through it, you know. It's almost like if Hitler hasn't died. Hitler's just reincarnated and is boxing clever now, you know. So he's
mm-hmm.
in a three-piece suit and he's on TV, on, you know, on the news, you know. But you know, he's not ranting and raving anymore, but he's inside a lot of people's hearts, you know. The fascist, the desire to control, the desire to be important, the desire to impose your ideas on others, the idea that you know best, you know, the idea that people are less than you and therefore you are entitled to sort of drive them, milk them, push them, tax them, pillory them, incarcerate them, hurt them, torture them, you know, imprison them. You know, it's all these old fascist sentiments, you know, because a spiritual person doesn't need to control anything other than themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you
yeah, the New World Order. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I missed it. I missed what you said, sir.
I was just going to ask you about you've done predictions in the past.
I have, yes.
Would you like to make any predictions about what may be coming during these next few years?
Well, this economic crisis that we're looking at now is very real, and a lot of it has been sort of like swept under the carpet, and this sort of propping up banks for 50, 60 billion at a time. You know, it's just a sort of, you know, patch-up job. So the economic crisis is going to become double worse, you know? So people have to get clear about their debt. They've got to kind of slim down and get ready, so to speak, you know? It's like, hey, there's a hurricane going to blow, you know? So let's batten down the windows. And, you know, like lay down and lash things down and make the horses safe. And, you know, people have to look to that because that's going to happen next. You know, there's no question of it. And then we see various major, major changes in the world, you know, changes that might take out communications, changes that might take out the money system and so forth, you know, and this sort of conspiracy theory that says the dollar will be replaced by a new currency called the Amero. I'm pretty sure that something like that is going to happen. So we look at these vast and massive shifts in consciousness and these difficulties. It's almost like mayhem and plagues. But then also inside all of this madness is the chance to transcend, you know. So with the darkness comes the light. So on the one hand, you've got this insanity, you know, where people are banging their heads off the wall. And on the other hand, you've got this person inside their silent power, walking along the banks of the Tao, at one and at peace with themselves, more connected to the God force, more connected to Christ consciousness, more connected to the Buddhahood than ever before. So it'll go both ways, you know, it'll go both ways. It'll be mayhem for some people, and it'll be utopia for others.
Mm-hmm. I, as a child, I got to see many visions, and some of them were not so pretty, just like I'm sure some of the things that you saw were not so pretty, but the end result is that I agree with you that the world is not going to just disappear, but it is going to be a change, a major change, something that we definitely, definitely need, and the world needs it to survive.
Hey, tell me about one of your not pretty visions.
One of my not creepy visions.
Yeah, I want to hear what they were. I'll tell you one of mine. If you show me yours, I'll show you mine.
Okay. Well, first, I'll talk about real quick. I had a really freak accident when I was 6 years old, and I landed really with my head and neck under my back. So I should be dead or paralyzed, and I'm either one. But as I lay there, my angels were talking to me, telling me that I'm okay, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, a lot of things, Nancy. Can't use it yet. We'll let you know when. So that's how I grew up, hearing you all the time, which is okay. So I would know when people were going to die just by looking at them. And as a child, you know, you'd want to say something, but my voices would creep in and go, no, this is not your concern. It's already been predetermined. But then they turned around and they showed me some of the things that are going to be happening, like the earth changes itself. You know, there's different shifts that the plates are making. And so the land is going to be changing. The climate's going to be changing, you know, stuff like that. But some of the freakiest ones that, you know, that were really hard to deal with was a lot of the diseases, the wars, all that stuff that's going to be going on, which is kind of happening now, but it will get worse. And there'll be a lot less people around, but at the same time, these will be the people that are here to really put everything back together. So, you know, my creepy ones were watching, you know, the visions of, you know, they would, like, show me, you know, say, a 50-year span in, you know, 10 seconds. And it's like, oh, wow, you know stuff like that. So I got to see all those kind of things all the time.
I've had lots of visions, Nancy, because the thing is this, if these economic systems collapse, then the glue that sort of makes everybody reasonable will melt. So I've had lots of visions, for example, of the brown shirts being on the street corners of England and troops in the street and so forth and people being incarcerated for no other reason than, you know, the government disagrees with how they look or how they, you know, how they are or the color of their skin or whatever, you know. So I've seen all of that sort of lockdown fascism coming, very much like the 1930s in Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's everywhere. That's everywhere in the Luna. You see it all the time, you know. And that, of course, is very scary. But then again, I genuinely believe that nobody can imprison your mind if you don't open your mouth. You know, if you stay silent, you can be radiating the love of God, a love of humanity, a love of the animals, and you can be at one and at peace with all things. And if the Nazis come, well, okay, salute and keep walking, you know. What can you do, you know? So we've seen those visions. And then I've seen lots of visions of the devil world. I mean, lots and lots of them, you know? So they were very scary at the start, and then after a while I got used to them. But the hell worlds and the hellish beings are truly hellish. I mean, they're disgustingly ugly. So it's all part of our evolution, isn't it? It's part of our learning. It's almost like these inner worlds. Don't you believe, let's say, your angels or your guides? You know, they want you to learn. They want you to become more, don't they, you know? They're teaching us to become more, and so we have to let go and agree to become more. You know, I say to people, listen, come on, let's walk away hand in hand, you know, in Gaia's name, let's evolve, let us evolve, you know, and let's become something different, because what we are now is boring, it's getting tiring, we don't need it, let us evolve, let us be gone, you know, to another world.
Go ahead.
No, I was just waffling. I was going to say, you know, we have to embrace this brave new world. But to embrace a brave new world, we've got to get let go of the ugly old. There's no other way. You can't arrive over there without letting go of over here. So I tell people, let go of trust.
A couple of the things that, you know, the angels would constantly keep drumming into me, my guides, whatever you want to call them, was the fact that, you know, we've forgotten how to love in a lot of instances. And that's one thing that with the changes that are coming, that is going to be coming back, is the, the way to love.
I was having dinner last night with a visionary I know, and he said exactly like that. He said, Stuart, this is just a process of remembering, isn't it? And I was saying, yeah, Brad, it is. It's just the process of remembering. Remembering who you are. Remembering your eternity. Remembering that you came from a divine celestial place where everything was beautiful. And you came here particularly to learn and to how to return back home. Hey, we want to get back one day, you know? We've been gone too long.
Yeah, we have. So, I mean, that was one of the things that they've shown me, that the end result will be that we will rediscover love and how to actually treat everything with love rather than what we've been doing.
And yeah, because I say, well, listen, join the tribe, find other people, find people like mine, you know, let's go dancing, let's celebrate, let's be together, the people, let's celebrate our differences, let's celebrate our similarities. Let's learn from each other. You know, there's so much to learn from people. You sit and you listen to a person, you can learn all sorts of stuff that you didn't know an hour ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. It's so important that we get to this place where we return to the community, to the tribe, to the whole, you know, the holistic nature of our humanity. Because we're all one person, aren't we, really? We're all linked. I'm not different to you. I'm not separate to you. It's an illusion. My separation is an illusion. I'm connected to you, and you're connected to me. And we're connected to 6.5 million people, you know?
Mm-hmm. And people really do need to get back to that connection, because we haven't been doing so good without it, in my opinion.
Well, no, you're right. And also, these people live in the isolation of the ego. They live in their little ivory towers and their picket fence and their apartment and their high-rises. And they're sitting in their little car in traffic, and they're isolated. So that isolation brings fear, it brings loneliness, it allows the demonic forces to infiltrate your mind. And, you know, there's safety in numbers, and there's safety in community, in tactile contact, and there's safety in all of those social situations. So it's extremely important for people to make the effort to go out and connect with people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, how do I do that? Well, join something. It doesn't matter where you join. Just join it and go along, you know? And then join something else and just find people and be interested in them and listen to what they have to say, you know?
Mm-hmm. See, that's the key, though, George, is listening to people with what they have to say, because people also forgot how to kind of listen.
Well, as a counselor and stuff, you would know how you have to sit there and you have to listen to your client. Otherwise, hey, you know, you don't have a right to get paid, you know. So being a good listener, and I say in my books, you know, you have to subjugate your ego and get underneath people and bring them up from underneath, you know, to assist them by listening to them and you know, commiserating or whatever. You don't necessarily have to offer advice, but you just have to be there for them, eyeball to eyeball. You radiate love. You blow love into their heart. You're at one in peace with this person that's teaching you something by communicating with you.
Mm-hmm. Sure, how about if we give out your website again so that people can go to it and get all this great information?
Sure. It's from stuartwild.com or stuartwildblog.com. And if you Google me, you'll see, you know, my YouTube channel is Stuart Wild 1 and other. It's all there, you know. So just Stuart Wild, S-T-U. A-R-T-W-I-L-T-E with an E. And there I am.
And you listed it in the Wikipedia, too. You want to give out that?
Well, I don't know. Just go to Wikipedia and search Stuart Wild, and I'm in there somewhere. Yes, that's true. So, yeah, someplace. Yeah. So there you go.
Stuart, you've been a lot of fun talking to you today. We'll have to get together and talk. We're not necessarily on air, but you and I have a lot of the same thoughts going on, and it's always, always refreshing to know other people think the same.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me. It's been delightful.
And you're very welcome. So I really like to thank you for taking the time to be on the show, and I'm sure all of the listeners really enjoyed what you had to say.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to get them to go to your website so they can go to some of your events, but I'm going to send you that email because I'd like to come to that Vegas event. It looks
Please do. Please do email our PR department, and I'll be happy to handle your
Stuart, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time. I know your schedule's very busy, but I would like to thank you. It's been a pleasure having you on here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much, Nancy.
And you take care, and we'll talk soon. I'd like to thank you, all the listeners. May God bless all of you. Have a great week. Learn to love each other, and really, take care. Bye now.